Huh. Have you ever wondered what a sandwich sounds like? Not much to it, is there? Unless, of course, it's a Walker's sandwich. Mmm, that is good. Now that's what a sarnie should sound like. Go all crisp in with Walker's. Delicious.
Ready to launch your business? Get started with the commerce platform made for entrepreneurs. Shopify is specially designed to help you start, run, and grow your business with easy customizable themes that let you build your brand, marketing tools that get your products out there, integrated shipping solutions that actually save you time. From startups to scale-ups, online, in person, and on the go, Shopify is made for entrepreneurs like you.
Sign up for your $1 a month trial at shopify.com/setup.
How you doing, Met fans? We are back for a special hot stove edition of the Terry Collins Show, presented by Tunnel of Towers, supporting America's greatest heroes. Donate just $11 per month by going to t2t.org. That's T, the number 2t.org. I'm John Arezzi. We got a very exciting show lined up for you today, a jam-packed one. We're going to get to it in just a few minutes here. We're going to be joined, of course, by Terry Collins and Andy Martino, Laura Albanese, and we also got a very special guest coming on as well, the Mets' former bench coach, the longtime manager of the Toronto Blue Jays, a member of the 86 Mets, and now the bench coach, newly appointed for the California Angels, Gibby himself, John Gibbons, will join us as well. So it's going to be a very cool episode today. Our last episode before Thanksgiving, and we also got lots of stuff to talk about in regard to Terry and his personal appearances coming up to New York on December the 12th, the 13th and 14th up in New York at the Queens Baseball Convention, and a new signing on Long Island with Tom Hallion. So we'll get right to all of that. The baseball GM meetings took place in Vegas, so we're going to get right to our leadoff right after this word. Let's talk about our friends and our sponsors at Tunnel to Towers Foundation. They continue their mission to honor those who have given so much to our country, and they work at it 365 days a year. In honor of Veterans Day this year, the Tunnel to Towers Foundation has provided 25 Gold Star families with mortgage-free homes. This is how Tunnel to Towers continues to honor the servicemen and women who have given their lives for our country. The homes are located in 16 states, highlighting the foundation's commitment to America's greatest heroes, regardless of where they live. You could learn more by going to t2t.org. That's T, the number 2t.org. Tunnel of the Towers is also working to eradicate veteran homelessness. In late October, the foundation broke ground on a new veterans village in Birmingham, Alabama. When it's completed, the facility will offer permanent homes for 110 veterans seeking stability. Tunnel to Towers is working on nearly a dozen similar villages across the nation. Already, T2T has helped house more than 15,000 veterans. For more information and to donate, go to t2t.org. And by the time the year ends, Tunnel to Towers will have provided more than 200 mortgage-free homes to those who protect our country and our communities. The foundation assists families of service members and first responders who die in the line of duty and leave behind young children. It also delivers specially adapted mortgage-free smart homes for catastrophically injured service members and first responders. That great work doesn't happen without your help. So please donate $11 a month at t2t.org. That's T, the number 2t.org. And we're going to be back with our leadoff and the rest of our show after we debut this brand new Tunnel to Towers announcement with the radio voice of the New York Mets, Howie Rose.
My wife and I are very proud to donate to Tunnel to Towers. It's remarkable to me that in the years since its inception, they've been able to provide so much. The commitment that they've made to not forget and to embrace those who have been affected but are in many cases thriving today because of what Tunnel to Towers has done for them. It's so transcendent of $11 a month.
Well, the baseball GM meetings just completed in Las Vegas. Those meetings are kind of the kickoff to the offseason, the unofficial kickoff. And two of the top baseball insiders join us today. We're happy to bring on once again SNY's Andy Martino and Mets beat writer for Newsday, as well as SNY Baseball Night New York analyst and the new vice chair for the New York Baseball Writers Association of America, Laura Albanese. Laura and Andy, welcome back.
Thank you so much for having me.
Hello, everyone.
Well, it's been a busy week. Lots to unpack. The GM meetings, unofficial start. David Stearns spoke to the press. Andy, you had a one-on-one with David. Laura, of course, you were there with the press conference that he had. And David was kind of, he was pretty transparent when discussing a lot of the aspects of what's going on with the Mets during this offseason. And my first thought, and I want to address this to all of you and get your opinions, the Mets go into this offseason with more question marks than answers, I think, at this point. Not only the two big free agents, Alonso and Diaz, but there is that first base question mark. There's a second base question mark, a third base question mark, center field, starting pitching, relief pitching, Alvarez.
Well, geez.
It's
when
so
you
much.
Put it like that, John.
I mean,
it sounds so easy.
What? There's got to be an enormous pressure on this guy, as smooth and as confident as he is. And there's got to be an enormous amount of pressure based on how the team finished this year. Would you all agree that that this is a pivotal offseason for the New York Mets, and especially David Stearns? He's got his work cut out for him. Andy first, then Laura and TC.
Yeah, I don't think there's any escaping that it's a big offseason for him, John. Obviously, having missed the playoffs last year puts the leadership, Stearns and Mendoza, in a spot where don't let that happen again. And those are the expectations that the team should have for itself, that the owner should have for his top employees. And for the Mets, trying to put themselves in the class of the Dodgers and Yankees and the dominant teams in the sport, there should be pressure every year to make the playoffs. And, that's what Stearns signed up for. As I'm talking about this, I remember, Terry, you remember, I don't remember exactly what year it was, but it was before 15 when the expectations on the Mets went up. Those early years for you. There was a story that got out from our colleague John Harper that Fred Wilpon had said, I want the Mets to win 90 games this year. He'd said it in like a private meeting. And at the time, that seemed like, whoa, 90 games. We're not used to the Mets being in that place right now. But it just shows what a different set of expectations they have now, that they're expecting 90. Yeah, you better win close to 100 and make the playoffs. So that's the pressure that Stearns is working under.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I mean, it's kind of compounded because you can only call last year a failure. So not only do you have the failure of last year, but at this point, because there are so many pieces that have come off the books, this is really going to be David Stearns' team. He's not inheriting all that much in terms of set pieces. Sure, obviously your right field is set and your left field is set. But everything other than that, the bullpen construction, he's basically going to have to build this bullpen from scratch. The rotation, after what happened with Frankie Montas, suddenly you're like, because he comes in with this reputation of being able, yes, to build really good teams, but also of being able to find these diamonds in the rough, of maybe finding and looking and identifying talent in ways that other front office executives aren't able to do. And I feel like last year there was like a little bit of just kind of like finally questioning, you know, some of Stearns' methodology, whether or not this is the right way to construct a team. And so now, not only does he have to reevaluate his philosophy, which he said he was going to do in the offseason, he's got to do something with that reevaluation. And it'll be interesting to see if he actually does change the way that he pursues or which players he pursues.
Yeah, you know, I think that every time you have a payroll that you that he has, and you have an owner who, you know, is pretty much saying, hey, we're going to win here. And I mean, they showed that changes are going to be made by taking care of all the all the coaches were gone. So that's the start. And of course, you know, I've never been one to ever blame coaches that I know worked hard to get the job done. So, you know, I would say the pressure next year on David and Carlos is going to be huge. But, you know, David's done a great job of filling in pieces. And you know, they've preached for the last few years about they're raving about their minor league system. Well, guess what? When you put yourself in a situation where you now are expected to win, and now you're going to put all that pressure on young guys, you might be asking yourself for problems. But you know, they wouldn't trade all those bright young prospects for help in the past. So if those are the guys, then those guys better be ready to step up, and that's going to put a ton of pressure on Carlos.
Yeah, certainly is. And you talk about those young guys. And one thing that kind of surprised me when looking at the press conference that he had was he specifically mentioned Carson Benge and that he would have a chance to make the team when he was asked about center field. So did you find that unusual that it was kind of like, all right, you know, he's pinpointed this guy. He said, well, Carson is going to have a chance to make the team. Is that unlike a David Stearns comment from the past?
You know, I think that it did strike me, John. I agree that was newsworthy. I think that Stearns's demeanor can obscure the fact that he actually will say things sometimes that are newsworthy. Yeah. I know that there's GMs out there like Craig Breslow in Boston and Scott Harris in Detroit that speak as if they are like AI generated executives. And Stearns actually, speaks English and says things that are headline grabbing. It's just that he says them in a way where we go, "Oh, this guy must be pretty buttoned up." But so to your point, I actually don't think he is. It's just his projection. But so that was newsworthy. But I don't think that seemed out of character for him to throw something like that out there.
Okay. Yeah, and I think the biggest takeaway from that was not only Carson Benge as a possibility as your opening day center fielder, but he kind of put it all in a big group. He's like, the young players need to play. And so that's twofold. We've seen him say that before, and certainly there was evidence of that last year. But there's also the other part of that where he said, well, yes, you know, at one point we had the best farm system in baseball this year, and they're still very high up there. And that's good in two ways. One, because you can have a guy like a Carson Benge maybe win a spot, in your starting lineup. And two, because finally you're at a point where you can feel comfortable finally trading prospects. And I feel earlier on when they were still trying to build that farm system, they're more cognizant of the idea, okay, let's hold on to some of these key pieces. But you can't hold on to every key piece. Not every kid that you develop through your minor league system is going to make it to your major league ball club. And now suddenly you have a little bit more trade capital than you might have in the past.
I wanted to touch, before we get to the big ones, Diaz and Alonso. He seemed really noncommittal when it came to Jeff McNeil. Mm-hmm. And I know, TC, you know Jeff really well, and he's been with the organization for an awful long time. But he was asked specifically about the role, and will Jeff see this playing time or at this position? And he didn't really seem he seemed more noncommittal to Jeff than I'd ever heard him before. Would you guys agree with that assessment?
I definitely. I think that the only place that I could see McNeil getting a lot of the bats in the Mets next year is probably first base if Alonso's not on the team. Stearns is too – he values defense up the middle too much probably to put McNeil at this phase of his career in an up-the-middle position anymore. That's my read on what they think. I think he's more likely to see like a Luis Angel Acuña at second base. Just real range, even if you're sacrificing bat, that just seems more a Stearns type. I don't think we're going to see much of McNeil in center anymore. That didn't look as good as it. I mean, I give him all the credit in the world for being able to even stand there in Major League center field. I think it's incredible athleticism, actually, that he did it at all. But it didn't grade out as like a plus center fielder, which Stearns wants. So I would say McNeil's probably either traded or sharing first base at bats would be my prediction.
Yeah, I could see him coming off the bench. I could see him traded. It's a little bit complicated now. He went through thoracic outlet surgery, which, you know, yes, he's expected to be ready for opening day, but how much does that affect his trade value? So how much are you going to get back for him? I mean, I like Jeff McNeil, the player. I have always said this. I do feel like you need a contact back. I do feel like super utility players are really, really valuable. There's always going to be guys that get hurt during the season. There's always going to be, you know, situations where you do need somebody to be able to step into a role. And imagine having that all in one player. I mean, this is your Swiss Army knife guy. Sometimes you'll get on Twitter and people are just like ranting and raving about trading Jeff McNeil. And I'm just like, he is a cheap option that can get on base and play multiple positions. That does have value. And if the Mets don't value that, you know, maybe there is another team that will, but again, the health situation might scare some guys away.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I don't know how bad Jeff's surgery was, but, you know, Laura, I agree, but, you know, I go back to what I learned a long time ago. You know, second base became an offensive position a few years ago. And so all of a sudden now we're talking about defensive. Well, you know what? That's great when you have pretty good pitching. If you have mediocre pitching, you better be really, really good defensively, because they're going to put the ball in play that much more. So I've always liked Jeff. He's put the bat on the ball. I like his versatility, what he does. And again, I go back to the teams that won for a number of years that had Ben Zobrist on their team. This guy could come off the bench, play any position on the field, get the job done. And again, was he the best second baseman in the league? No. Was he the best outfielder in the league? No. But what he was a good bat. And that's what that's what Jeff McNeil is. So if you dump a Jeff McNeil, you better turn to somebody. Is it going to be Brett Beatty? Well, Brett, you're talking about trading the guy who won the batting title one year. Mm-hmm. And you're going to replace him again with another young guy. So I think, again, for me, when it's all about, hey, look, we better get in the playoffs next year, you better have a real good sense of who you know, those guys that can get the job done at the major league level, and have very, very good confidence that that job's going to get done. I mean, everybody talks about, you know, Pete Alonso at first base. You know, outside the catcher, there's the only other position who handles the ball a lot is first base. So, I mean, you know, you talk about, you know, Pete Alonso, what his issues are at first base. Well, you better find somebody who can do that job at first base, because they handle the ball as much as anybody, if not more than anybody on the field. So I've always looked at a first baseman as a guy. Hey, look, I want somebody there who can play the position. So, and I know one thing about Jeff or about Pete. Nobody works harder at it. Nobody takes more pride in being better at it than he does. So, and you're going to get that bat away. Well, then you better find somebody who can play Gold Glove, who can also drive in a lot of runs.
Yeah, the Pete issue is certainly front and center. Excuse me for a second. I was just getting a text from John Gibbons.
Hey, Gibby. I was happy to see you landed somewhere, but unhappy to see it was so far away. I'll miss him.
Yeah, we're going to segue right into Gibby. So I know, Laura, I know you have to depart in a little while to catch a flight, but he's going to join us in a little bit. So we're just going to kind of segue, bring him in and have some fun with Gibby, a California man, which I never saw coming. But anyway, getting back to Pete, Marsh, if you could prepare that little clip of Scott Boras. I do want to play that, I guess, that pontification that he said. I don't know if Terry, if you saw it or not, but
I saw it. Oh, my
God. Like, first and foremost, there's been reports that these early discussions have been a little bit more friendlier and a little bit more open. Why don't we discuss Pete, after we take a look at this quote from Scott Boras, because I found this, like, I couldn't even believe I was hearing what I heard from this guy.
Yeah.
So let's play that, and then we'll talk about it on the other side.
DHing, if he goes back to the Mets, is that something he would consider going
back? I think Pete, at this point in his career, he's about winning, no doubt. Had that question a lot. There's no doubt that Pete's pursuers are primed to pay the power piper. You know, Pete picked a perfect period to play preeminently at a primary position. A playoff parched plethora will pounce to participate in the polar plunge.
How do you keep a straight face when you're standing in front of the man?
I don't. So I actually don't go to that. That is too annoying. I stayed in my room and watched the footage later. That's my honest answer.
I was right front and center. And he had like a bunch of Top Gun puns for Cody Bellinger. My favorite was courting Zach Gallen. Then we had some Dylan Cease puns in there. And I am trying so hard not to laugh. And people are giggling around me. And I'm just like, no, don't do it.
You mentioned Starbucks coffee too for Boston. There was a Starbucks reference.
For Bregman. Got... Yeah.
What does he do?
I can tell Terry's really amused by all this. You think it's hilarious.
Yeah.
But the serious part is like he's representing Pete Alonso. And you know, when you look at the Mets situation, I mean, where do you find a replacement for that power, for the RBIs, for a guy that posts 162 games a year? I mean, that's difficult. Who's out on the marketplace that you could replace him with? Mm-hmm. So when you listen to what Stern says, and of course you listen to what Boris says, and he's going to pontificate, what are all of your gut reactions in regard to, you know, what are the chances that this works out and Pete becomes a lifetime Met or gets a deal longer than the Mets may have initially thought they were willing to give, something past 3 years, for example?
I think he probably helped his case by being opening to DH. In the past, that's not something that Pete had wanted to do and, you know, brought that back to Stearns. And he was like, well, I'm really happy to hear Pete say that. So obviously this is something that Stearns values because one, the run prevention aspect of it, but also if you are going to give a guy like Pete Alonso a long-term contract, you need somewhere to stash him later on in his career when maybe his body starts to show signs of wear and tear. So I do think that kind of helped in his favor. And then, I mean, there is a reason that Scott Boras kept hammering the idea that Pete is durable. Durability, durability, durability. He plays 162. What does durability mean? Well, maybe that means that this is a guy who you can keep on the field when he's 36 years old. So, I mean, taking those things into consideration. And then, you know, just asking Stearns about it, he did, even though I don't find them to be a particularly sentimental organization, he did say, you know, whether you believe it or not, he does take into account what a player means to the fan base, to the franchise. And if he does do that, then it's harder to find a player that's more New York Mets than Pete Alonso.
I actually, you know, Laura, I do think, so Stearns is the side, and he probably could be more open about showing it, but this is a guy who literally would hide the radio under his covers at home in Manhattan as a kid.
So did I.
Listen to Gary Cohen and Bob Murphy, and like there is romanticism about the Mets. There you go, with him. And I do think he connects with that part of it. I just also think he sees, well, I'm the steward of this franchise now, and I don't want to get them into anything that I think would be stupid. So I think he's trying to balance those two things, of course. I think he wanted Alonso on the team last year, and I think he wants Alonso on the team this coming year. The question is, do you want him on the team in 2030? Especially, mm-hmm. I think the DH thing helps, but his willingness. But at the same time, Juan Soto's on that same path. Right. So how's that going to look in a couple of years? Assuming Soto doesn't use his opt-out coming down in a few years. So there's all kinds of different things to consider. It's a tricky puzzle. But I, to your original question about length, John, maybe I could see the Mets going 4 years. It's pretty tough to see him going longer than that.
Well, I said before the show, John, you and I and Laura were talking, and I will tell you, you know, Scott Boras, in his own mind, got embarrassed last winter with Pete Alonso. He's not going to do that again. Pete went out and had a tremendous year, and Scott Boras is going to get somebody to pay up, and he doesn't care where it's at. Make no mistake about it. He's going to pry. He's going to talk to the Mets about longevity. He's going to talk about fans and this and that, but Scott's going to get the money. He's going to get what he wants, and if the Mets, you know, Pete may say, well, I'll take 4 years with the Mets. Well, if that's the case, then they're going to ante up because Scott's going to get what he wants, and you know, and I can just – that's why I'm not – I want Pete back in the worst way. I think it's going to be very difficult for the Mets to get the job, the deal that Scott and Pete want done.
That's a great point, Terry. And I think that all it's going to take is one organization out of nowhere to swoop in with an overpay, you know, what the Mets is an overpay. Right. Same thing as last year. Nobody offered Alonso more than 3 years last year. If somebody had, he'd have played for that team. So already, right? So if someone swoops in and does that now, yeah, that could be that. And it you never know who it's going to be. You can remember when Jason Wirtz signed with the Nationals. You're like, okay, didn't see that coming. This could be one of those where it's like, oh, the Rockies just gave Alonso 6 years. You know, you never know. That was the thing that was missing last offseason. And I agree with you that the agent and the player are going to be motivated at their last shot at this to maximize that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it could come from anywhere, too. I mean, look at Boston. There's a little speculation right about Boston. That's where mm-hmm. Pete's wife is from also.
Yep.
So there's another little personal thing there. And Baltimore, I've heard their name mentioned a little bit. But wherever it goes, I certainly hope that the Mets can bring Pete back. When it comes to Edward Diaz, I think his market is going to be very robust. And he had some comments last night in Vegas at the awards dinner mm-hmm. where he was a reliever of the year. And I guess he was asked about his chances of coming back, and he said 50-50.
Yeah.
So when you hear and that would be a guy that's impossible to replace for the Mets, and you kind of weigh Pete and Edwin, who do you have the priority? But I think both of them are. But for Diaz, I think his market's going to be off the chart this year.
Yeah.
Like you get all of your assessments on Diaz and his chances of returning to the New York Mets.
I mean, the one thing I love about Edwin Diaz is you ask him a question, he just answers it. Like he's a very nice guy. He's a very genuine person. So we asked him, you know, what are the chances? 50-50. But look, there's absolutely no doubt about it. He said he will simply go to the place where he can get the best deal. It's like, I want the best deal for my family. This is going to be his last chance, really, to get a big chunk of change, most likely, for a longer period of time. And he's going to take advantage of that. You know, I'd gone down to Puerto Rico once to do a story on him and his family and the entire town there. Extremely family-oriented, gives a lot back to the community. The money is life-changing, not for him, but the people around him as well. And that's not lost on him. So, if the Mets give him the most money, that's where he will go. If somebody else gives him the most money, he's like, I'd be happy to play there too. And I think that kind of tells you everything you need to know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I do think, you know, John, we talk about irreplaceable, and I agree and disagree. And I guess the part where I agree with is the ability to succeed in New York and be here and be a Met is something you're gambling with. We saw it with Ryan Helsley in a huge way. You just don't know. On the other hand, as dynamic as Diaz is, and as much as the ballpark experience would miss, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Met playing the trumpets, a Devin Williams or a Kenley Jansen on a one-year deal probably converts most of those save opportunities too, I will say. I could see the saves being easier to replace than Pete's home runs and RBIs, to be honest with you. A lot of people can get saves, even if it's not as exciting.
I'm going to tell you what, I agree absolutely with both of you, what you just said. He's dynamic, but he's going to get paid too. We just go back to the playoffs. It's all about bullpen. I mean, you saw what the Dodgers did in the World Series. If you started today, tomorrow you're in the bullpen. And their starters got more innings out of the bullpen, I think, than their relievers did. Yeah. So you've to have that dynamic reliever in that pen is going to be huge. There's going to be a huge market for him.
Yeah, and I think one of the biggest things is, like, it's not just Diaz, but getting a guy like Diaz helps you kind of put all the other chips in, because look at who they have left in that bullpen. There's so much work that David Stearns has to do in reconstructing this unit that if they are willing to pay Diaz, suddenly his job gets a whole lot easier, because you do have that shutdown back end. Mm-hmm. You're probably going to get AJ Minter in, which is going to be huge coming back from injury. But other than that, there's a whole bunch of question marks. I mean, like, between that and then they're going to have to be looking for long relief as well, because finally they learned, you know, the lesson that the traditional long man role is there for a reason, especially when starters are going 4 or 5 innings. So Stearns has a lot of work to do. Signing Edwin Diaz makes the rest of that work a little bit easier.
It certainly does. And then on the starting pitching side, anything can happen. I mean, it's such in a flux when you look about, what they had last year and how everything fell apart on the starting pitching side. And then the young kids who came in at the end with the impressive performances by them, especially Nolan. But he has once again, and Terry, you're all about pitching as well. I mean, this starting pitching staff, there's a lot of question marks there. And who's he to go after? How many frontline guys are going to be available via free agency or even trade? So it's going to be a tough winter for him to piece together the starting staff. Would you guys agree?
Yeah, I would say so. And I'm not even confident. I'm not confident at all that the Tigers are ever going to trade Tarik Skubal.
No.
So that takes one thing off the table, most likely. And then you have to look at who you have left. You have Framber Valdez, Dylan Cease, Zach Gallen, I mean, and Nick Martinez. And then there's kind of like this big drop off. So, I mean, there is, you know, when you ask David Stearns about it, he's like, sure, we'd love to have a frontline starter. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how many frontline starters are actually available to be had, and that's a real issue.
Yeah, and to that point, Freddie Peralta was seen as kind of an alternative to Skubal, and what the Mets and other teams learned this week in Vegas was that the Brewers don't seem to be interested in trading Peralta, which is a little bit of a surprise because they do that with guys like Corbin Burns a year before free agency, but Peralta not available right now. So you're looking at, like Laura said, now you can start to get into twos and threes and whatnot, but the Mets need an ace. So
yes,
it's tricky right now to find. They might have to find somebody who we're not necessarily looking at, who they think they can turn into a top of the rotation guy, because those are obvious ones that we tend to talk about on our shows and whatever. Skubal, Skeens, Peralta, not available right now.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what you want me to say except, you better get pitching. I don't care. You better get pitching.
You're right,
you
know, Terry.
If you really think you're going to go out and get somebody's number three and he's going to be your ace, you're not getting in the playoffs. Mm-mm. You know, if your ace is a number three guy, you know, I was so impressed with the way those kids handled themselves. You know, I'm hoping that McGill comes back and is ready to go again. And, you know, I lived it with those young guys, but, you know, look what happened to me. I mean, I had all those tremendous arms and, you know, all of a sudden in 2017, they weren't there. And again, it just happens. And that's the dangers about pitching. But you've got to find, I agree, you've got to find an ace somewhere.
Yeah. And if I'm a Mets fan, that's where I'm most worried about. Not because I think David Stearns wants to skimp in this particular market, but just because there just, again, might not be the talent there or available or accessible to create this pitching staff. If guys like Nolan McLain maybe aren't, you know, allow the kid to have a rookie year, you know, he's not going to be perfect every time out. If Sean Manaea doesn't become the Sean Manaea that we knew from 2 years ago, there are so many question marks that is, I think, probably the biggest concern. I just don't know what is available if things don't work out exactly right.
It's going to be an interesting offseason for sure. Before we end the leadoff here, I did want to touch upon something that is a major problem right now in baseball. Mm-hmm. And that problem is the gambling scandal that has emerged in baseball right now with the Cleveland Guardians pitchers, Manuel Clase and Luis Ortiz, both federally indicted now on conspiracy, wire fraud, money laundering charges for their alleged roles in tipping off bettors about specific pitchers in prop bets. This is the tip. This could be a tip of an iceberg. This is a potential disaster for this game. How big of a problem can this become if further measures aren't taken by MLB to distance themselves and to get these prop bets stopped? I mean, it just seems to be out of control right now. And I'd like to get everybody's opinion on what's going on.
Yeah, I agree. And I the irony was not lost on me that we're doing the general manager meetings in literally Las Vegas in a casino. It's so hard for Major League Baseball to say, you know, that we're so against gambling when they're so deeply embedded in gambling in every aspect of it. You can't go to a ball game without them saying, oh, well, you know, you take the over and under on how many fly balls there's going to be, like stuff like that. And that is all over every stadium because there's so much money in it. And then you expect it to somehow not sully the sport itself in different ways. I mean, I give Scott Boras credit. He was like, prop bets need to end. For two reasons. One, because the temptation on these players to maybe do something small that maybe doesn't throw the entire game, but makes them a little extra money in their mind, is there. But then there's also the other side of it, of just like, well, then every time a guy makes a mistake pitch and truly just makes a mistake, you have to question and be like, is it because he has money on the game? Because everything's a bet. Absolutely, everything's a bet.
And you can't have that, those questions. Boris is absolutely right. You can't have those. Once you start to wonder, once the integrity of the competition is in question, there is no competition. I mean, this is, there's no such thing as sports if we're not believing in what we're watching, right? Yeah. And just these guys are just trying to win, trying to execute the pitch that's like just essential to its importance. So then it becomes, how do you regulate? MLB took a step this week where they limited those bets on pitches, kept them at $200 and not allowed them to be part of a parlay. I don't actually know enough about gambling. I just said a lot of words I didn't even know before this came up. I'm not a sports gambler myself.
It sounded good.
Thanks.
I learned what a parlay was last year.
I've learned long ago how to say things that I don't know what I'm talking about with confidence. That's how I've gotten this far. And I just did it again with gambling. But I think, on the other hand, you know, it's interesting. I just read something before we came on. Chris Christie, the former New Jersey governor, who is a Mets board member, wrote an editorial for the New York Times today, and I'm still processing his thought, but he was basically saying, you know, he was involved in this legalizing when he was governor. He advocated for this. Remember, Jersey was out front of this. And he's saying it's better to have regulation than it is to have just Wild West illegal gambling. Yeah. I mean, I guess you could make the same argument about drugs, right? Like prohibition versus regulation. And Christie makes the argument that we wouldn't have even found out about what's going on in the NBA or the MLB if not for these things that are in place, because now we can regulate and set rules and it's not just some bookie that you call. So that's an interesting food for thought too, as we all try to process what's going on here. If it's going to exist, is it better that it be legalized and have rules on it?
You know, guys, I always look at it. It's like, you know, when this started to get out of control with all of the sports books around. I mean, you own the ball sports books and ballparks now. Did we really naive enough to think something like this wouldn't happen? I mean, it's, you know, I've said this for a long time. I mean, how do we know that 20 years ago somebody, you know, didn't offer a player a lot of money to strike out with the bases loaded in the World Series? We don't know. I mean, but so now all of a sudden it's out there and it's legal, and now we're, you know, throwing our hands up in the air. Well, you know, we set ourselves up for it, and basketball set themselves up for it. And anytime you bet, you know, I was the farm director of the Dodgers one time when our AAA team was in Las Vegas, and I was trying to get a new stadium built for our team in Las Vegas. And the mayor of Las Vegas said, "I'm not building a new stadium until we get Major League Baseball." And I said, "You're not ever going to get Major League Baseball in Las Vegas. They cannot possibly let the gamblers be that close to the players." And what's happened now? They're all the sports are in Las Vegas. So, yeah, I think it's a mess, and I hope they put all sorts of restrictions on the gambling side, because that really taints the sport itself.
Terry, without being in any way specific, I would ask that. So, since I don't know anything about this stuff, the point I was saying that Governor Christie made, and that you kind of just made, like, we don't know if someone just took a dive on something in the World Series and a prop bet for an illegal bookie 30 years ago. Did you ever get the sense in your many decades in the game that things like that could possibly have been going on? Did you ever hear a rumor of, oh, this guy might be involved with some gamblers? Or, I mean, you hear that from like old baseball, right? Like pre Black Sox. But
you know,
like,
Andy,
were there rumors around the game?
I never did. I never heard that. But, you know, you would hear somebody, something happen on the field, and you'd hear somebody at bench say, "Oh, there, he's got it. That had to be on purpose." Yeah, you just can't make that big a blunder, you know, at the major league level. So, but I never saw it. I never heard about it. So, but I was, you know, I was really sickened to see what happened. Because I don't know a lot about the one guy, but, you know, Class A's. My God almighty, why would the money he could possibly make, why would he do something to make an extra $200,000? That doesn't make any sense.
You know what? That makes me think, too, that there's more to this story. That's a great point. There's more to this story than we know, because certainly there have been guys coming from different parts of the world, the situations of which we don't really understand.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Why would somebody take that risk? I'm not going to offer any theories, but I have some thoughts.
Yeah, my mind went the same way, where I was just like, that does not make logical sense. And a lot of times, especially as reporters, when something's like, that does not make logical sense, it means that we have not had enough information yet.
Right. Yeah. Exactly right, Laura. Well, we certainly appreciate your time, Laura. I know you have a flight to catch.
Back to New York.
So I hope
Randy, good to see you. I hope to see you soon. Right. Laura, thanks for coming on again today.
You guys thanks back. For having me.
And Andy,
we say congratulations.
Yeah, Andy, hang out with us for a bit. And Laura, it's great to see you. And we'll talk to you soon. Thank you, Laura.
Thank you.
All right, our leadoff segment. And we're going to segue right into a very special surprise guest that I was able to speak to yesterday. Here is a guy that is now singing the song California, Here I Come. So why don't we bring on to the panel today a very special guest, director. He's in San Antonio, right? You're in San Antonio right now, Mr. Gibby.
Are you a West Coast lefty now, Gibby? Is that what's going on?
We're crying out loud. I thought I was red through and through, man, but I can't find a job in a red state. I'm in blue, New York, California. I was up in Toronto. What the heck? Maybe I'm supposed to rub off on them places or something.
There you go.
Well, I'll tell you one thing, John. I'll tell you one thing. You know, I manage the Angels. And starting about the middle of April, you will not ever go to the ballpark where the sun's not shining. It is, and if the weather, you are going to be some kind of a happy guy because it is absolutely spectacular baseball weather.
Yeah, you know, California, Southern Cal, especially, there's not a prettier place on earth, you know, than that place. And I'm looking forward to it, you know. And I obviously left the Mets, and I thought I was going to maybe do a little scouting, something like that. And then, you know, Perry, the GM out there, and I talked to him and Kurt Suzuki, who's going to be his first year doing it. They called. I was really impressed. I knew Perry from way back and thought, you know, hey, let's give it a go, you know, see what happens. So here I am. Hey, real quick, I got a quick, because I was listening to the end of that last segment about the gambling in Vegas and all that. Because I played for TC in 1988, and Vegas was in the league. We were in Albuquerque.
TC,
I can remember we go on a road trip to Vegas, and the buses, you know, or the vans, whatever we took back then to the ballpark, everybody was always on the last vans, right? And as soon as the game was over, we had everybody was on the first bands out to get to the casinos. It was like,
yeah, give me. I tell a story. I'm not going to mention the names, but I had three players one night. I had a 1 o'clock curfew, you know, after a game was over. And so it's 1 o'clock, and I'm walking through the casino going to my room, and there's three of my players sitting at a table gambling. And I said, hey, boys, it's 1 o'clock. And they said, one guy said, what's the fine for being out late? And I said, it's $100. He reached down and gave me $300 chips. And he goes, here. He said, we're red hot. We're not going anywhere.
Beautiful. I might be able to pick those guys out, but I won't.
Yeah.
Well, John, you know, obviously you spent 2 years, last 2 years with the Mets, and it had to be different for you this season compared to last season. And what kind of led to you saying, you know what, you know, maybe the team will be in better hands if I look for greener pastures or whatever. So if you can just let us know, you know, how that that whole transition happened for you.
You know what, I'd kind of, a couple months towards the end of the season, I started saying, you know what, I may need a new look, if anything, you know. And I thought about maybe scouting, that kind of thing. And it's just kind of, you know, it's almost, I'm glad I'm going to do another year out there in Anaheim, but it's almost more of a youthful game nowadays, you know, with all the analytics, you know, not that I can't fit in to that crowd, but it's just so different, you know. And not only that, you know, we got towards the end, you knew there was going to be some changes. There's no question about it, you know, because of what happened. You know, you never expect to have to go down to the last game of the year and win and hopefully the other team to lose. You know, you figure you're going to win some games along the way, but that's just kind of the way it was. So you knew there was going to be some changes. And I, actually, I told him that so I could beat him to the punch before they could fire me, actually, if you want to see.
It's clever. I thought that's what you might be doing, Gibby.
No, no, but I tell you what, I really
enjoy you and Glenn Sherlock. Oh, oh, I'm leaving. Wait, before you call me, I'm leaving.
Before you can get me, you know, I thoroughly enjoyed there. You know, working for Mendy, you know, was the best. You know, they don't come any better than that guy, you know.
And
he's doing a great job. But, you know, and then, you know, they when you don't reach your goals or and your payroll is what it is, and, you know, you're in a big city like New York, that's what happened. I'm a little bit surprised at the number of changes to the coaching staff, but you know what? Maybe I'm not. I don't know. So, but, you know, even David Stearns, all those guys, you know, the first-class guys, they're good baseball people. It's just something that happens when you're, you know, you're not – you don't achieve what you're supposed to. But, you know, when it was all said and done, everybody's looking, what happened, what happened? And sometimes you're just not good enough. You don't play good enough. Doesn't mean you don't have the talent, but so TC, right? You know, sometimes you just don't play as good as you should. Instead of looking for, well, this was wrong, this was wrong. No, sometimes, you know, you got outplayed. You didn't do enough. For whatever reason, you know, you don't, you know, overanalyze it. Sometimes you move on and then wherever the waste falls, let it fall, you know?
Well, you and Terry both have been baseball lifers, and you've been there, done it. You've seen all the changes that happen in the game and your tenures. And so you guys kind of have a kinship when it comes to, like, seeing the evolution of baseball as well. And as skipper, former skippers, Terry, go ahead. I mean, I know we talked about it before.
I'm going to tell you, I think the game still needs John Gibbons's of the world. The game still needs you. And I think I don't know Kurt very well, but I was always impressed about when you played against him. I always thought he was the smartest catcher that I'd ever played against. I thought he handled the best, you know, and to have you on his staff, I think is a brilliant move by him. He's going to want to pick your brain like crazy. Obviously there are things now dictated by stuff that, you know, you're getting down from computers. But you know what? The gut still has to play someplace once in a while. And I think you're going to do a tremendous job out there. He's a lucky guy to have you, John.
Well, P, I appreciate that. You know what? I didn't know him either, you know, but I obviously, you know, played against his teams and I was always impressed too, you know, his energy just to, you know, and he played a long time. But hey, that compliment coming from you means a lot, you know, and we'll see. Hopefully, you know, it's been a battle out there for a number of years. I mean, you know, and, you know, hopefully we can turn that around and get that place back on track.
I got a couple other Met questions for you. Obviously, this was the first year Juan Soto joined the club. And Gibby, as you know, I mean, biggest contract in the history of North American sports, a guy that's very methodical. I'd like to get your impression on seeing Juan Soto on a day-to-day basis in his first season with the New York Mets, and what stood out to you most?
Well, John, you know what? He's, you know, he had an unbelievable year. You know, he got off to kind of a slow start, maybe by his terms. But when you look at it was all said and done, you know, he really had a big year, and he was up for that MVP award, you know, we saw last night. So,
yeah,
you know what? He keeps to himself. You know, he's I don't think he's one of those guys that likes the limelight. You know, that caught me off guard a little bit. You know, because I figure most guys, when they're that good or that talented, you know, they love the spotlight. I think he's satisfied with just going out there and doing his job, which I think is nice to see too. You know, you know, of course, obviously when he was brought in, we think, okay, you know, there's no way this team can't win the World Series, but we all know, you know, it's never that easy. No. And you know what, but sometimes you bring in the big guns. You know, it may take a year or even two to everything come to fruition, you know, to everything settle in. And because there's a ton of talent on that team, but you know what? That doesn't always win it for you. Mm-hmm. You know, you still got to play together. What I think hurt us, it was pitching and defense. You know, I mean, I don't think that's a secret, you know, and what do they call it? Run prevention now, like the NFL or something. I call it pitching and defense. And we, you know, you can't, hey, that's just the way it goes. If you're going to be a championship team, you got to have those two things. And that shows true every single year when you look at the teams that get there.
Yep.
Gibby, do you think it was mostly that? Because we could all see that you guys were short on pitching at a certain point. And obviously around the diamond defensively. They're trying to shore it up now. Do you think it's that simple, or do you think, is there a certain thing that happens when a team is going through a collapse or whatever you want to call it, that did you notice the tightness? Did you notice the, we got to win today, like whatever that psychology is that takes over in a bad situation? Did that happen, or do you think it was just as simple as like, hey, we're short on pitching and defense?
Yeah, you know, Andy, I didn't feel that or sense that at all. You want to know the truth, you know, and you're right. You normally do, but I didn't sense that. But you look at our year. You know, we started off really good, right? Our pitching was rolling along, and you know, even without Manai at the beginning, you know, and then when he came back and Frankie came back to Montas, you know, and then they were the pitchers that they normally are. So, but you kept waiting for that to mm-hmm. kick in. Right. And then some other guys started struggling. Senga went down, you know, he was the ERA leader, I think, in the league at the time. And, you know, everybody goes through injuries. I mean, that's just part of it, but it's hard for any of the teams that go through it to overcome it in a lot of ways, you know? And so that's kind of, that's where we started, you know, going the other direction a little bit. It wasn't like it was necessarily a rapid fall off, or didn't feel like it. You know, you look at the way the trajectory it was pretty dramatic there, but it really didn't feel like that, because we had kind of built up a nice little cushion there. But along the way, I mean, you could tell our defense was struggling, you know. I mean, we got guys that aren't known for their defense that you know, we're signed and paid to swing the bat, right? That's kind of the way the modern day baseball is in a lot of ways too, you know. I mean, we can go look at the other teams, even teams in the World Series. They play some D, you know. I mean, you got to. So whether that, I don't think that was a lack of coaching. It was just, you know, some guys. You know, I had Jose Reyes, you know, in Toronto. You know, he picked up Jose from the Marlins, right? Incredible career, a great shortstop, one of the most talented athletic kids, right? And I had him, and he was kind of at the tail end, and he just wasn't moving as good. That's just what Father Time, you know. And that some guys got it, some guys don't. It catches up with guys sooner or later. But this isn't always rocket science like we try to make it out to be. It's just way it is, you know.
Did you guys go into that last trip of the year feeling like you're gonna? Like, see, you finished in Miami. Where were you before that?
Chicago. Won two out of three.
Right. Thanks. So you won a big game in Chicago. Did you guys get into Miami then for the last weekend thinking like, all right, we got this? Was there still a decent, or was it like, oh God, how's this going to go? What was the feeling getting in there?
Yeah. You know what? It's funny to describe it. You know, I don't think there was it wasn't like there was talk all the time. Well, we got to do this, we got to do that. You know, it usually doesn't work that way, you know? But I can remember saying to one of the other coaches, I think this was, you know, a couple weeks, maybe even 3 weeks before the season's over, when things, you know, the storm clouds were brewing, you know, everybody was hammering you, whatever. And I could say, I hope we don't have to go into Miami that final weekend and sweep them or win a series to do it, because they're always tough on us for whatever reason, you know. Them in Washington, the teams you figure you can handle, you know, baseball doesn't always work that way, but they were always tough on us. So it was kind of my mind. I said to, I think it was Sarbaugh, I said, you know what? I hope we don't have to go down there and sweep them or something like that, because that's going to be tough, because, you know, they still got good pitching and they had our number. And sure enough, you know, you get down there and there it was. But, you know, that's the beauty of the game, you know, that in the wild card's a great thing, that games can go down that to the very end there, you know, to determine the outcome.
I'd be remiss if I didn't bring up what to me was probably one of the most exciting World Series I'd ever seen. That is the Blue Jays against the Los Angeles Dodgers. And for me personally, the only other World Series in my lifetime, or actually two, that I could compare this year's World Series with was 1986, which was a 7-game World Series against the Red Sox. And Gibby, you were there for that. And previous to that, you were in the bullpen. One. You were catching off, hearing those horses jump up in the bullpen every time the ball hit the mitt. But you were there. You were part of that team. And before that was really the first World Series I ever really remember diving into. And that was '67 with the Red Sox and Cardinals. But this year's World Series was remarkable. And Gibby, with your ties to the Toronto Blue Jays organization and TC, your ties to the Los Angeles Dodgers organization over the course of your career, how would you compare, and Andy, I'd like to get your thoughts on it too, how would you compare this World Series as far as all-time great World Series that have taken place?
Hey, well, TC's got his Dodger blue on, by the way.
Isn't that more like the Blue Jays road?
That new Toronto powder blue that everybody's
that's
wearing.
What I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the Tunnel to Towers Blue Jays edition.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
No, I guess your thoughts on the World Series this year. I thought it was a great one, personally.
DC, lead it off, baby.
Well, you know, I thought it was an exciting World Series for sure, and you know, it goes down to like Gibby was saying. I mean, both teams, they came out, you know, they showed outstanding pitching, tough situation. I thought the Dodgers, obviously, I told someone down here, they asked me who I thought was going to win. I said the Dodgers, and they said, why is that? I said, because their starting rotation, they're in mid-season form. They only got 70 innings. They were out all year long, and now all of a sudden they're fresh as heck. And the Blue Jays, they're pitching young guys right now because, you know, that's what they got. But, you know, I was shocked at the end of the year. And, I mean, what Yamamoto did was off the charts. I mean, the fact that he would do – even say – I mean, I thought his agent probably was going out of his mind every day he warmed up in the bullpen. But it was exciting. You know, it was the energy level was tremendous. I did not stay up for the 18-inning game, guys. I'd seen enough 18
innings. Oh, me neither.
That was brutal.
There's a time when you get to be my age and you'll say, I'll look at the highlights tomorrow. I don't need to.
Yeah. Or a tea time. It was a tea time the next morning.
That's correct, John. That is correct. That's correct. And so, but I thought it was a lot of fun. I work out in the wintertime with Andrés Giménez, so I was kind of hoping that, you know, he would may have something that'd be really, and he did. He, of course, played very, very well during the playoffs. So it was enjoyable for me to watch. And again, no disrespect, but I didn't care who won. I just, you know, I was interested in watching the games more than anything and just watching the ins and outs of how the game's being played today.
A lot of drama in these games. Mm. Gibby?
Yeah, you know, just like TC said, going in, you know, I've both bullpens, you know, neither one of them are locked down. That was kind of their weakness, you know, if you had to find one of them for both teams. So I thought the same thing. Well, the Dodgers have the rotation depth, and they're fresh, and, you know, they had the big guns. They haven't been touched at all in the playoffs before that. And so I agree with TC right there. And then, you know, funny, those guys, the Dodgers starters ended up getting in the games. In Toronto was on a roll with their bats, and they even hit some of these guys around, you know, but what Yamamoto did, it's incredible. You know, it goes back to like Baumgartner, you know, back in with the Giants, you know. TC, good thing Yamamoto got that nice contract already under his belt. Otherwise, he might not have come out of that.
Yeah, you're right. The agent's getting the commission either way every 2 weeks, no matter
how. That's right, Andy. That's right. That's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah, so it was a great, great series. It could have gone either way, you know.
Yeah.
Naturally, I was rooting for the Blue Jays there a little bit, you know, because, you know, I still know some of those guys up there, especially the coach and staff, you know, but it was entertaining.
It was.
You know what's fun for me, John? Dodgers on a roll, huh?
Yeah, you know what's fun for me? The Clement kid and the Lucas kid. Mm. I mean, two tremendous stories. I just thought, you know what, that's what's cool about baseball. And you know, and I thought the way they played, the way they went about their job, you know, that I really enjoyed watching those two guys play.
And how much they cared too. It's Ernie Clement was crying for an hour after the game. Yeah. And look, I know that most guys care. If you didn't care, you couldn't be in the big leagues. But it's nice every once in a while when they let the fans really see it. You know, there's sometimes teams lose like professionals. All right, I'll get them next year. And sometimes they're like feeling it like the fans are. And I think one of the things that was special about this Blue Jays team was clearly how close they were, how much they cared. Guys like Clement showed that. And once in a while, it's nice to show the fans that they're feeling it like you are. I mean, I ran into Scherzer at Yankee Stadium in September, and I hadn't talked to him yet as a Blue Jays. How's it going here? And he was going on and on about, oh, these guys are making me love baseball again because everyone loves coming to the park every day. And, you know, believe me, you don't get that every year with every team. And so you could see that there was something special there. And, you know, I found myself rooting for them too, which is fun when you're not covering or working it, right? You just kind of catch a feeling from one of the teams and your rooting goes there. And that Blue Jays team was so likable. And Gibby, what a baseball town too. I don't have to tell you, but just a reminder, I was there for the Yankee series and just the enthusiasm and how positive they are and how into it those fans are. That must have been just such a great place for you to work for all those years.
Well, yes and no, man. If you ain't winning, it ain't a good place.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I bet.
Well, then they don't even cover you, man. It's Maple Leaf hockey, you know, if you're not
good
playing.
Point.
But you know, it is a special place. And it is. There's one team in that whole country. And when I first went there as a coach and started managing, you know, everybody would tell me over and over, hey, if you guys are relevant in the end of August, September, watch what happens to this place, not just here in Toronto, but across the country. But we never were. You know, we were, you know, the Yankees and the Red Sox were the dominant two teams back then. And they pulled away from everybody by the end of May, right? So everybody's just kind of limping along after that. But then finally in 15, things came, you know, everything kind of came together and it was like a light switch. You know, we started playing really well and took off, and now we're relevant. And that city and that country, you know, you it's hard to describe, you know. And then you know, we got in the postseason and you know, when you close that dome and it gets a little cooler, you know, playoff time, I mean, that place, it's intimidating, you know. You can hear yourself breathe, so it's tough for an opposing team to play, you know. And we didn't get over the hump, get to the series. If we just won a couple more games, heck, we would have been playing TC in 15, man, in the day.
That would have been something.
I know it, man. But anyway, so it is a special place, and it's, you know, if it's like most places, you know, if you get a good team and you people love baseball. But they don't want to pay a ton of money to go out and watch a team that's not performing, right? You can't blame them for that. And but this season right here, I mean, that'll carry over for a few years. And the key is to maintain it because it's still a hockey place all the way, you know. And Canada is. It's just the way it is. Mm.
Well, I thought it was a great World Series, and of course, I got to know some of those guys too when I did the podcast with Gibby for a couple of seasons. And well, I guess we won't be restarting that podcast, John, because you'll be heading out to California.
Okay, cow baby.
Need to get that in.
Yeah, well, I hope you get to have a good off season though. Are you planning to go to Yellowstone or doing some of the nature stuff that you do typically over the last few seasons?
Yeah, my wife, the photographer. Yeah, I got to take her. Probably January we're heading out there.
Yeah,
you know, when it's really raw and cold. You know. Yeah. So yeah, before I hit,
she's fabulous.
Before I mean,
she's a great photographer. I mean, just. The nature photography,
she's
phenomenal, phenomenal, phenomenal. Well, it's such a pleasure to have you on here, John. It's really cool, you know, and we wish you the best.
My favorite people right there. I appreciate you guys.
Appreciate you very much.
Gibby, I just want to tell you, really, good luck, and I wish you the best. I think it's great. I was real disappointed when I saw you step down with the Mets, but I'm glad you resurfaced and you're going to be a big difference in that team. So good luck.
Yeah, let me say too that we talked earlier in the show, Gibby, before you got on, how do the Mets replace Diaz's saves if he goes? How do they replace Pete's RBIs if it goes? All good questions, but they better have a replacement for your decades of knowledge and wisdom and experience too, because those are real losses for the organization. I really mean that.
Well, hey, I appreciate that, Andy. But you know, hey, Mandy's good. Mandy's in tune with everything, you know, and. You know, the good managers, they don't need, you know, it's more of a sounding board. You don't need a guy there in your ear all the time. You know, maybe if you got, because they hired you because you know what you're doing. You know, I think it's important that the bench coach contribute a little here or there, but you can't be overbearing because you screw up the train of thought of your manager. Huh, TC, you get a guy that wants to be a bench coach and wants to be in your ear all the time. That, you know, that doesn't always work either. But
Terry, you wouldn't know anything about that.
Getting out sitting in the dugout talking baseball, or that's what I'm going to miss with you.
You know, and John, you're right, but it's, you know, I'm looking at now a number of managers who've been hired with no experience. And, yeah. And again, it's a little different. You know, even when we were managing in the minor leagues, I mean, the decision making process was crazy. Okay, so now you're getting a little assistance, but you know what? There's still that guy that you can turn to. Did you have something in your mind to say, hey, you know, I'm thinking this. What do you think? And you may agree, you may disagree. I just think, you know what? There's still room. And I tell a lot of guys, the guys that I've known for a long time, hey, there's still a place in this game for someone who you could consider an old timer. It's not always about, you know, it's not always about the new technology, the new things involved. You know, once in a while, it's got to be that down to grind it out kind of mentality that, you know, we as older guys had to go through on a daily basis. And it's going to play. There's going to be, you're going to run into a guy that, you know, it could be Mike Trout, you know, that you change, you get him back on. You know, hey, look, let's play it through this plate. That what got you here. Because that's what, you know, that's what made you a star. And I think your presence in that dugout is going to mean a lot to those guys.
Pete, thanks. You know, and I agree. You know, it's the teams that play the game the right way. You can do all the computer stuff you want. But if you do the basics right and you got enough talent, the game never changes that much. That, you know, and you all you got to do is watch that World Series and you can tell, right? You know, that's the way the game
Absolutely.
Is played.
I agree, John. You know?
So,
all righty, Gibby. Thank you
so much. All right, boys. Thanks again.
See Gibby. Good to see you.
We'll talk to you soon. Have a great Thanksgiving, my friend. That was great. John Gibbons joining us, and we just wish him the best out in California, and it's going to be wonderful. And Andy, I want to thank you for your time today as well. Also, we'll be seeing you at the Queens Baseball Convention coming up.
That's right. It's coming up. I was actually preparing for this, Terry, already. I was watching the video again and thinking where my questions are. I was thinking, what new can we say about this? Where's Hallion coming in from? Where does he live?
Kentucky.
He lives in Kentucky.
All right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, I'm looking.
Yeah, you're gonna referee this one, Andy. You're gonna referee this one.
It's Tuesday. It's
gonna be a lot of fun. It's gonna be a lot of fun to do, and you know, but it's. When I talked to him, he said, let's do it. I said, I'm looking forward to it. So it'll be fun. I'll be happy to see you.
Yeah, me too. When you did the episode with him on this podcast, it was very civil. So if you don't mind, come and bring your red ass to the interview. We'll have it more. We can mix it up a little bit more. You guys are too respectful. The last time.
Andy, were you at that game 10 years ago, almost 10 years ago now that the
– No, I didn't happen to have been covering that game, actually. Yeah. But I certainly saw the footage.
Oh, my goodness. Everyone has seen the footage. Millions of people have seen the footage.
Yeah. All right, Andy, take care. Thanks for coming.
All right, guys. We'll talk
to you
soon.
So much. And let everybody know where they could find you, by the way. I mean, you're very busy these days, obviously. But
don't find me. Leave me alone.
You want to be left alone. All right. Listen, you have a great Thanksgiving. Bye. We'll talk to you soon. Thank you, Andy. All right, Terry. I mean, that was a good segment. We got Gibby in there. And so it was really, really cool.
The first segment, it was really good with the talking. So some of the stuff you brought up, John, was really apparent. I mean, that stuff needs to be talked about. So I think I thought it was great.
Well, we appreciate it. And I know you got things to do as well. But before you go, what we'll do is we'll talk about that Queens Baseball Convention. And so, Marsh, if you can queue up that spot that's running on SNY, it'll give everybody the opportunity to see what's coming up in New York, in Queens, in Flushing on December the 13th. And that's the QBC, which is really sponsored by SNY. In our situation, we're working with Coaches Collectibles, who brought Terry in, and Brett Beatty's going to be there as well, Jesse Roscoe, and, of course, Tom Hallion. So let's take a look at that spot.
Join fellow Mets fans at the Queens Baseball Convention presented by SNY, Saturday, December 13th at the Four Points by Sheridan in Flushing, with special guests Jesse Orozco, Terry Collins, Tom Hallion, Brett Beatty, and more. For tickets, visit queensbaseballconvention.com.
Yes, and that's coming up. And then, of course, just announced, Marsh, if you could put up the new signing that's going to take place on Long Island. That'll be on Sunday, December the 14th, and that's at a place called Mulcahy's, which I'm very familiar with. They do a lot of signings there in TC. Have you done much stuff out on the island as far as signings, or is this kind of one of the first times you'll be out there signing?
I've done a couple of things out there, John. That's been it. I have played in a couple of golf tournaments out there for some things, but you know, I'm looking forward to it. And it's going to be a lot of fun. I know there's a lot of people that are, you know, pretty excited to have Tom and I together for the first time since the argument. So it'll be,
You've heard from a lot of people who are kind of like, this is going to be kind of cool. So I think a lot of people will look at it that way, that it's a unique opportunity to really get the inside story, which we've talked about, but with Andy's perspective and the fans being able to be there and see you guys together signing and photo ops and all, it's going to be a lot of fun. So it's Queens Baseball Convention on December 13th and on December the 14th out on Long Island at Mulcahy's in Wantagh. And Brett Beatty will also be at Mulcahy's as well as the Queens Baseball Convention. And Jesse Orozco will be there as well. And Terry, I know you've been there for the last 3 or 4 years, and it's always good. It's not thousands of people. It's hundreds and hundreds of people who come, and they're all really diehard Met fans, and they love the interaction with you.
They do a tremendous job. There's a lot of energy. It's the kickoff of spring training, you know, even though it's December. It gives those fans who are huge baseball fans and huge Mets fans something to get it, go into the winter and get ready for the season.
Yeah, that is true. And Terry, I just really want to thank you again for today. And we know you got to run. You got some people from the Mets organization coming in to kind of take a look at some of your treasures that you've got hidden away there in Port St. Lucie.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate it, John, as always.
All right, my friend. It's good to see you.
Fun. All right.
What a great segment. We kind of blended in a leadoff segment with a talking with TC and with John Gibbons. So lots going on in the Mets world right now. And we're going to be back and also talk about and give you a little bit more information about those two appearances with Terry and umpire Tom Hallion right after our Tunnel to Towers Hero of the Week segment, this week featuring Bakersfield police officer Jason White. So let's go to that right now.
On behalf of Tunnel to Towers, we are proud to welcome the White family into their newly renovated, mortgage-free smart home.
We're Jason and Nicole White. Tunnel to Towers it's unbelievable what they're doing for us and for the other families.
Our lives changed dramatically in June of 2022.
He had 4 strokes and he fell into a coma.
We faced rough and scary moments, but we are grateful that Jason continues to improve little by little each day.
So we spent a lot of time in rehab hospitals, and he's been going to therapy 4 or 5 days a week. I can't even imagine how things would be right now if we had to handle a mortgage on top of everything else. I wouldn't be able to stay with him like I am and take him to appointments. It's truly life-changing.
On behalf of the men and women of the Bakersfield Police Department, we extend our deepest gratitude to Tunnel to Towers Foundation.
It's beautiful. We love the open, wide hallways. We don't have to actually lift his chair and struggle with it to get him in and out of each room. We love the kitchen. He can actually be in there with us when we're cooking and doing things as a family. We're able to put him in the shower chair and he can shower and use the restroom. All of those daily things that we take for granted sometimes and weren't really able to do in our prior home. I don't know any other organization that ever does anything like this to first responders.
This home, it's a symbol of a nation that chooses to honor our heroes by caring for them and for their families.
Jason, you have given so much of yourself. Today, it is our turn to give something back. Welcome home. You've earned it.
Join us in supporting our nation's heroes and their families now. Go to t2t.org. It only takes $11 a month to make a positive impact.
Well, we're less than a month away from the two big events in New York, and we just spoke to Terry about that. First time ever appearances with umpire Tom Hallion. And the first one's again taking place on December the 13th at the Queens Baseball Convention in Flushing. And then, of course, out on Long Island at Mulcahy's. So just to give you, give everybody out there, if you want tickets to the event, go to queensbaseballconvention.com. That's queensbaseballconvention.com, and that would be for the QBC convention on December the 13th. So you can get your tickets there. Just to give you an idea of the schedule, it's an all-day event. It takes place beginning at 10 a.m. Doors open at 9:30 a.m. It's taking place at the Four Points by Sheraton Hotel, 3368 Farrington Street in Flushing, New York. The agenda has already been set, and it starts off at 10 a.m. with Jesse Orosco, world-famous pitcher for the New York Mets and a member of that 86 World Championship team. Jesse will be there as part of a panel, and then he'll be signing autographs as well. And then there'll be a State of the Mets panel that takes place. SNY is coming out to do a program there live in front of the audience. They have an award, which they give out each and every year. This year, the Gil Hodges Award will be awarded to a recipient who will be well-deserved, I'm sure. And then right after that, we do the Terry Collins Show live in front of a studio audience there, in front of that convention audience. That begins at 12:45 p.m. to 1:45, and then Terry and Tom Hallion begin their signing session. Then the convention will continue, topping off with Brett Beatty, who will have a panel himself. The Mets third baseman will be there signing autographs and a panel. So once again, queensbaseballconvention.com. And on the Sunday appearance, that's going to be more of a photo opportunity for you to get your picture taken with Terry and Tom Hallion and autographs as well. Brett Beatty will be appearing. And for that, you go to CoachesCollectibles.com. That's CoachesCollectiblesNewYork.com for your tickets to the Long Island appearance on the 14th. And Mulcahy's is located at 3232 Railroad Avenue in Wantagh, just steps away from the Long Island Railroad Wantagh station there out on Long Island, on my old stomping grounds out there. We all look forward to that. And before we wrap it up, we always like to remind you to check out our amazing conversations with Jay Horowitz. It's a New York Mets podcast hosted by the foremost Mets historian, and Jay brings on guests from all eras in Mets history. Conversations with Jay Horowitz, available on all podcast platforms and on YouTube. You can subscribe to the Terry Collins Show on your favorite podcast platform on our own YouTube channel. Just hit subscribe on the platform of your choice. And for our YouTube viewers, the entire archives of the past two seasons are available, including full episodes, interviews, and highlights from each show you can check out. Just go to youtube.com/ The Terry Collins Show. And that's going to wrap up this edition of the program. Thanks to our creative director, Marsh, and to our researcher, Dominic DiBiase. For Terry Collins, this is John Arezzi. Thanks for joining us, and have a great Thanksgiving, everyone.